Want to shop Walmart Black Friday deals first? Walmart Plus members get early access to our hottest deals. Join now and get 50% off a one-year annual membership. Shop Black Friday deals first with Walmart Plus. See terms at walmartplus.com.
This is Amber and Ian. No Ian tonight. Home team Brandon Leak has been kind enough to hang out. If you've missed anything here in Amber and Ian, check out the podcast on the ESPN app. We have had an action-packed show. We also had head coach of Notre Dame football, Marcus Freeman, join us earlier in the show. So a lot to catch up on. If you haven't gotten a chance to listen, you can find Home Team Brandon Leak at
Home Team B Leak. That's L-E-A-K.
And you can find me, Amber Wilson, at Amber W Sports. So SEC Football Media Days has been in full swing. That is where Ian has been. That's why he hasn't been here this week. And it's wrapping up today down there in Dallas, Texas. So Ian's been giving us all the goods. Today he had an opportunity to sit down with Kentucky head coach Mark Stoops. Here's some of that.
Coach, it's talking season.
Yeah.
But you got a squad this year that, you know, I'm looking at going, all right, there's a sleeper in this conference. Watch out for Blue. What's the biggest difference of your squad this year compared to the last couple of years?
I think just a little bit more maturity. Obviously, you know, a new offense coordinator again. It wouldn't be talking season if I wasn't talking about a new offense coordinator, right? But I think, you know, we have a lot of time now. The rules give us more flexibility to spend more time with the players. And so I feel like that's been a smooth transition. And I feel like a lot of our impact players have grown up. You know, a lot of our playmakers on the offensive side of the ball last year were still young guys and true sophomores. So just the maturity and the experience and the growth needs to help. You know, I think, you know, if you look at the teams we've had, when we've had an opportunity to win 10 games and compete in New Year's Day bowl games and things of that nature, we've had mature football teams. And so I like the blend, you know, that we have this year. I feel like we have some experience. I feel like we have some young guys that can compete and play. And we have a new quarterback in Brock Vandergriff. What I've seen from him, I really like. But as you know, until you get out there and compete and play, you don't know how it's going to go. So yeah. I feel good about him.
Yeah, the Georgia transfer. I mean, he's got a cannon, no doubt about it, as your signal caller. I haven't asked anybody this yet, but I thought you'd be perfect. There's a couple rules changes that a lot of fans may not realize. You got comms now for the quarterback and your signal caller on defense and a two-minute warning. Just from a coaching perspective, describe the difference there.
Well, I mean, I think with the two-minute warning, it's just going to be situationally, you know what I mean, what you're looking for. It's another opportunity. It'll be different, but you know it's built in. And with the communication, we used it every day in practice last spring, and we liked it. You know, we felt like it was a relatively easy transition. Our coordinators like it. Our players liked it. And so I think it'll help. But everybody's playing on an equal playing field, so it is what it is. And I think it'll be a little bit of trial and error, you know what I mean? You know, how much you want to talk to them, how little, you know what I mean? Once we train these guys, once they play, you want them to go play. I think, you know, for coordinators and play callers, talking with the quarterback, it has to help, but it's going to help. But it's going to help everybody. And also using the pads, you know, iPads on the sideline, you know, is new this year, and we're able to do that. We were fortunate enough to use that as a trial in the bowl game, and we liked that as well. We felt like that was relatively smooth, and we liked the opportunity.
All right, rapid fire and a couple fun questions. Mm-hmm. That's every head coach needs. You ready?
I'm ready.
Which SEC head coach Googles himself the most?
He does what? I'm sorry.
Googles himself the most.
Elaine.
1,000%. And not even batting. Even the commissioner.
Come on.
He says, come on. Which SEC head coach is more likely to steal your drink at the coaches' meetings in Sandestin?
Kirby.
You were the number one answer.
Because
you're a prankster.
Hey, I resemble that. but I'll say this at the SEC meetings, they always know that I'm going to be the one to go in the back, and I get Jimmy Sexton to buy us the biggest bottle of wine we can find.
That's why I'm hanging with you.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, what's that one? Happy, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Lord.
That's right.
All right. Your favorite go-to toppings on a pizza are?
Just pepperoni. I'm playing. That's right.
Which coach would you like to have had in the history of football as a high school teacher?
Drink.
Wow, really?
Yeah, drink. Yeah, definitely.
He let you skip class.
Yeah. No, Drake's good, man. He'll sneak up on you. He's a smart dude. You know what I mean? He's got that school teacher look. You know what I mean?
But, I like
Eli.
And
we're good friends. He's fun, and he's a smart dude. And I think he'd have that good blend of, you know, teaching what you need to get taught, but also have a little fun.
Last one. Last time you cried at a movie.
Oh, shoot. I can't remember. My kids would probably make fun of me, but I don't know.
Oh, Yeller. That's what I got. Good to see you, Coach.
Thanks, man. Good to see you.
So, again, that was Ian Fitzsimmons sitting down with Kentucky head coach Mark Stoops at SEC Media Days. We will have plenty more from Ian all throughout the night here on Amber and Ian. He has been giving us the good stuff from SEC Media Days. But it does bring up the question, with all this SEC talk, Brandon Leak filling in tonight for Ian Fitzsimmons, does there need to be more parity in college football? So Ian Fitzsimmons also had an opportunity to bring up that very question to seven-time national champion head coach Nick Saban. Take a listen.
If we come up with some reasonable way that we can level the playing field in terms of competition, which right now we don't have, with name, image, and likeness being like it is, we don't have a level playing field. Some people are spending more money than others, all right? So, but if we did, you would have even more fan bases because you would have more parity. You know, I use the example all the time in the NFL. Everything they do in the NFL is for parity. Salary cap, you win, you play a harder schedule. You lose, you play an easier schedule. You win, you draft later. You lose, you draft earlier. Everything's for parity. So the whole goal was if everybody could be 8-8 after 16 weeks, you got 32 fan bases still engaged.
Amen.
Yeah, so that's actually a good thing.
You're going to hear more from Nick Saban a little later in the show, so you're going to want to stay tuned for that. But Brandon, it's interesting because having this conversation with Nick Saban now, as Nick Saban is an analyst as opposed to the head coach of Alabama, a little different vantage point because, frankly, I would have thought those words were incredibly hollow when he was still the head coach of the program, sitting at the top and benefiting from a lack of parity.
Yeah, I don't think Alabama boosters were going to be interested in helping to prop up the Kentucky fan base recruiting budget or traveling budget as well. You know, college football where it is now, it's this hybrid between what college football used to be and what pro football is, where you do have incredibly successful big brand names with a lot of fan bases that have gobs of money, but everybody doesn't share everything. And so that's the difference to what Coach Saban had to say. Until you share, which is a dirty word in college football, in pro sports, it's not a dirty word. It's a good thing in the NBA that everybody shares the revenue. It's a great thing in the NFL that everybody shares the revenue. You're not looking to share the revenue in college football. LSU has no interest in raising funds, having their big pocket boosters help out the Florida Gators, get on a playing field that's equal so that they can, you know, maybe play in a college football playoff game that's beneficial for everybody. No, you get your boosters, you find your businesses that can help your program. We'll have ours, and we'll see you in the college football playoff. And so until there is some sharing of the revenue, I don't think much is going to change in the way of parity, because whoever has the biggest war chests at the end of the season, those will be the programs that will be standing at the top of the hill.
What's funny is, though, I don't feel like there's ever been parity in NCAA college football. There hasn't been. I mean, Nick Saban says there will. You have some people spending more money than others, and I think that's a reference to booster collectives. And now we see it all. We know what these collectives are. We know how deep their pockets are, and we're seeing it in real time that some of these schools have far deeper pockets than others in terms of the booster support. By the way, that's always been the case. We just didn't used to see it, right? It wasn't in the. And we all know. I mean, come on. We all know what was happening. Even for the more legal aspects of it, right? Where sure, pay for play and all that stuff, and there's, you know, maybe there was money being dropped off in paper bags and on corners places and whatnot. I'm not even talking about all that. Just in terms of facilities, Brandon, in terms of what you made available to these players, in terms of training staffs and medical staffs and nutritionists and all that sort of stuff, the programs were not equal back then, and they ain't equal now. And that's the reality of the situation, because some of these schools make a whole lot more money than others, and some of these schools have a whole lot more rich boosters than others. college football has always been fine. So would it be nice if there was a small program that, you know, actually, I guess, I mean, and we've seen it, you know, like we'll see Cincy have its run and whatever. But at the same time, it's not as if college football, the product, has been suffering all these years from these juggernauts on top.
I've had the opportunity, the director of athletics at the University of Georgia, Josh Brooks, allowed our show here in Atlanta, the locker room on 680 The Fan, to take a tour of the Georgia football athletic facility. And I'm telling you right now, there's not an NFL team that wouldn't go there and say, we want ours to look just like theirs. And that's the difference, because you're right, it's never really been equal. There's never really been parity. There's always been some team or some program that has had boosters or the $100 or $1,000 or $30,000 handshakes that were able to get an advantage or two. The weight rooms and the facilities and what you fly on and where you stay, all of those are advantages that everybody just can't one have or get to. And I think that's the real conversation that needs to be had. If you want to build a model where you get it as close to having some parity, you're going to have to figure out which teams can afford to invest in college football at the same levels, and then have a tier system, if you will, to see who can catch up. But there are some teams that just cannot catch up. And so I don't think there's a problem, because those graduates, those business people, and those that give back and have been giving back for a long time, I don't think there's anything wrong with seeing their football programs rewarded for them walking the halls, graduating, going off into business or whatever, and then giving back to make the football program better in the future.
Yeah, I mean, Vanderbilt in the SEC isn't going to spend as much money on its football program as Georgia or Florida, where I went to school. It's just the reality of the situation. And heck, if I ever struck it real rich, if I ever win the lottery, if the Power Five hits with the tickets that I have in my purse, Brandon, like, you, there will be signs. And the sign may be that Ben Hill Griffin Stadium will be Amber Wilson Stadium one day. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. Like, I love myself from Gators football. I'm probably putting my money there if I ever had it like that.
I'm with you. If I become a billionaire some kind of way, you can best believe at 838-830 Westview Drive at Morehouse College, there'll be a home team dome for the football team, and the basketball facilities will be up to par with any building on the planet Earth. So I get it. I get it. And it's a passionate thing. And that's the one thing that is a little different. The passion for college football and college athletics is just a little bit different. And the money shows us that.
You may not know that home team won the lotto, but there will be signs. All you have to do is go to Morehouse and you might see a thing or two. Coming up next year on Amber and Ian, I will give you my top five running backs in the NFL. That's next on ESPN Radio.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like UNTUCKit or Allbirds, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business making selling, and for shoppers, buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. On the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout UNTUCKit uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/network.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes in detail.
To rank stuff, particularly this time of year. You know, we love lists. We love rankings. We broke down ESPN's top 100 athletes from the year 2000. We got the top 25 on that list today. Brandon and I broke it down earlier in the show. If you missed anything here on Amber and Ian, check out the podcast on the ESPN app. Home Team is filling in tonight for Ian Fitzsimmons here on Amber and Ian. So we love to rank things. We love lists. And in the spirit of that, on ESPN Radio, we rank things taking you up to the NFL season. All things NFL, a variety of things. Today is our top five running backs. I am on the clock. Let's get to it.
From the top offseason additions.
Barkley high steps it, 92-yard touchdown run.
To the top five home field advantages.
How about them cowboy?
And everything in between. This is ESPN Radio's NFL Rank'em. The top five running backs.
So I had a hard time with this one. I really struggled with the top five running backs.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of different ways you can go. There's obviously several very good running backs in the NFL, but there's the running back category of the production of the past, and then there's the running back category of what you think the production is going to be moving forward. And for me, those are kind of two different conversations. And so it's very hard deciding where to rank these guys. You're going to find, because I'm going 5-1, my first couple guys are going to be based more on projections as well moving forward, and then I'll probably nod my respect to the top three that are still the top three, but I could see that list looking quite different after this next upcoming season.
Number
so let's
five.
Get to it. So now my number five, probably going to make you and your people a little happy there, home team in Atlanta, because I have Bijan Robinson as my fifth running back. Now, Bijan didn't really come out of the gates to the level of expectations that some people had as the eighth overall pick. He didn't explode, but he still had a very solid 2023 season. He rushed for 976 yards, four touchdowns, 4.5 yards per carry, narrowly missing that 1,000-yard rushing season in his rookie year. You do have to take into account, though, I think, the state of the Atlanta Falcons during his rookie season. Changing of the guard there in terms of the leadership. I think that they're going to be relying on Bijan and trying to get the most of him moving forward. He had amassed over 1,400 total scrimmage yards. He's really good at forcing those missed tackles. And I think that it's the ascension here that I'm looking at most. Where do I think Bijan Robinson's going? I think it puts him squarely in the top five. What say you, Brandon?
You could be finished now. That validates everything else you're about to say. Bijan Robinson is a top five running back, Amber. And everything he does is going to be more. He's going to have more than 976 yards rushing. He's going to have more than 487 yards passing, passing or receiving yards from Kirk Cousins, who's going to come in passing all over the place and what could be a quarterback's best friend, but a running back out of the backfield who is very slippery. I like your selection of Bijan Robinson at number five.
Number four.
Number four is also a bit of a projection because you're talking about a young player, but boy, have we seen the snippets from him when he has been healthy, and that is Breece Hall. Breece Hall, best running back under 25 years old. You could make the argument. Now, we know that he tore his ACL, so you have to look at what he did in his rookie year before tearing his ACL, where he looked absolutely brilliant. And then what he did, frankly, when he came back, when he looked better than I thought he was going to look coming off of that injury. He made me eat some words there because I wasn't convinced that Breece Hall was going to end up being anything special coming off of that injury. But late in 2023, 357 yards, three touchdowns, just over weeks 16 through 18. And that's despite, you know, not having any sort of passing game around him whatsoever. And everybody knowing that they were going to have to rely on Breece Hall to get that running game going further. And that's the reality of the state of the New York Jets at the time. It was a dumpster fire for this team last season. But at the times that I did see him healthy, averaging 4.3 yards per carry against eight or more defenders, I mean, he was a machine. I hate the New York Jets. I do have to give him some credit, though.
He is a dangerous individual. He's a tough customer. And I think the point you made about what he did after coming back out off of his injury – He is a guy that has to be dealt with. Aaron Rodgers now going to need a running back, kind of like Kirk Cousins as well. I think a similar to trajectory to Bijan Robinson. I think that's a fantastic selection at number four with Breece Hall taking that slot.
Number three.
So my third, though, now I'm going to nod it to the OGs. That's because Derrick Henry still sits as a top three back in the league. How much longer is he going to do that for? I don't know. I didn't think he was going to do it this past season. And then he went and rushed for over 1,100 rushing yards, 12 touchdowns, 4.2 yards per carry clip in 2023. This dude is ridiculous. Still, I don't know how he's still doing it. We're going to see what it looks like in a new uniform. But man, Henry, Lamar Jackson, that pairing this season, woo, buddy, it's a scary one.
He is a man that is going to a place where they like running the football. They need to run the football, and he's going to run the football. Solid selection again at number three.
Number two.
My number two is the most complicated one because I still have Nick Chubb here at number two. Some people aren't going to have him in the top five at all because of the injury. Other people are still going to have him maybe close to number one. He had rushed for over 1,000 yards in four consecutive seasons before 2023, amassing 40 rushing touchdowns during that time. Nick Chubb was the best running back in the NFL at points. It's a question mark. Is he going to return to his former elite self? If he does, though, Brandon, that dude's ridiculous.
He's an alien. He returns from injury. He could squat everybody on this show right now. And when he gets out on a football field, he is tough to bring down. Gets cold in Cleveland, but he gets hot late in the season.
Number one.
Speaking of coming back from injuries, that seemed like no problem for Christian McCaffrey, and boy did it look good with the San Francisco 49ers, and he led the league with a career high 1,459 rushing yards last season. He added a league leading 21 total touchdowns in the process. The former Panther is ridiculous. We already knew what he was like in Carolina. Now he's even more ridiculous there in San Francisco. 339 touches from scrimmage. That also led the league. This dude is a workout horse and a dual threat. He can do it all, Brandon.
Hits the home run, short yards, red zone, throw it to him, block, elusive. He's the best running back in the NFL.
Yeah, one of the best players. I mean, he's just so dynamic. Oh, by the way, he caught 67 passes for 564 yards.
That too.
Because he can do that too while averaging 5 yards per carry. That dude is riddick. Coming up next, we're going to head back to SEC Media Days as they're wrapping up in Dallas. That's next right here on ESPN Radio.
Bombas makes the most comfortable socks, underwear, and T-shirts.
Warning, Bombas are so absurdly comfortable you may throw out all your other clothes.
Sorry, do we legally have to say that?
No, this is just how I talk, and I really love my Bombas.
They do feel that good, and they do good, too. One item purchased equals one item donated.
To feel good and do good, go to bombas.com/ESPNpod and use code ESPNpod for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ESPNpod and use code ESPNpod at checkout.
Finding the right employee for your company is tough. One wrong hire can be a major setback. You're not alone if you face this. A recent survey by Robert Half shows nearly half of hiring managers readily admit to making a bad hire. Luckily, there's a solution. With Robert Half's specialized recruiter's experience, combined with our award-winning AI, you can have the right skilled professional in place quickly. We understand what it takes to build winning teams because at Robert Half, we know talent. Discover how we can help at roberthalf.com/talent.
We are rolling along here on Amber and Ian, presented to you by Progressive Insurance. Home Team Brandon Leak filling in for Ian tonight. You can find him at Home Team B Leak, L-E-A-K. You can find me, Amber Wilson, at Amber W Sports. ESPN has recently launched ESPN Experiences Take Me Out to the Ballparks Tour. This is super cool. It's set for Labor Day weekend. Stops include Fenway Park, Yankee Stadium, and Citizens Bank Park. That is not bad. Plus, you get an exclusive tour of ESPN headquarters. All you have to do is visit experiences.espn.com to try to secure your spot today. So you're definitely going to want to do that. Now, Ian is not here because he's been at SEC Media Days in Dallas, Texas this week. So he's been sitting down with everybody all around the SEC. He had an opportunity to talk to the Auburn head coach, Hugh Freeze. Here is some of that.
Coach, first of all, if you can take all of us behind the scenes, what's the biggest difference year one in a program to year two as a head coach in a program?
Well, I think everyone's a little different. I mean, for us, it's the roster's a little better because we had a full year to recruit. And two, I think just being more comfortable with the staff that gives you a better feel of chemistry that kind of translates into confidence with the players. And definitely feel that, you know, is our roster where exactly where I'd like for it to be? Totally no, but it is better. But I do think if we can promote that chemistry that gives great confidence, year two can look better.
What's the biggest difference in a quarterback year two in the same system? And you guys, Peyton Thorne, yeah. We've seen some good quarterback play out of Michigan State.
Well, I think that's twofold. I think for sure he's going to be more comfortable with our adjustments and what the expectations are for him to get us into and get us out of. But again, I think the pieces around him play a little better. It gives him more confidence. And, you know, we struggled some last year. He was not confident that he could turn it loose on a given route. And I think we've improved that aspect of our offense. And hopefully that combination of him having a better understanding and stuff with some better pieces around him gives him a great year.
Your wide receiver room? It's in the shot of guys last year, but your top four this year might be better than anybody you had last year. Just describe that particular aspect that helps your quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, excited about Dre Lambert and Sam Jackson and Robert Lewis, the guys we picked up through the portal, and then the young ones I think are super talented. And I've had some really good receivers at the places I've been, and I'm very careful not to put too many expectations on them because I've had seen it both ways. I've seen A.J. Brown and Laquan Treadwell, it didn't matter,
right?
You know,
right.
But I've had some others that are playing in the NFL right now that we redshirted, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think Cam and Perry and Malcolm and Bryce are all very, very talented, and some of them are going to have to play. But I want to temper the expectations a little bit. But I am cautiously optimistic, particularly what I saw out of Cam in spring.
As far as the 12-team playoff. What does that do for the game of college football, having that many more fan bases be able to be invested later in the season?
Well, I think there's some positives and negatives. You just spoke of the positives. I mean, those 12 teams are going to do really well with their fan bases and excitement and all of that. I do think it could diminish some of the bowl playing deals, and you're setting at a place that has expectations that are high that you want to be in that, and then you don't make it. You know, what do we do with the opt-outs, and what do we? So I think there's a lot of things that we don't know yet, but there's no question it's going to generate a ton of excitement and exposure for our sport.
All right, here come the off the wall questions, rapid fire. You ready?
Yep.
What SEC head coach Googles themselves the most? There's been one answer from every head coach.
Blaine.
You got it. That cracks me up, man. It's unbelievable. Which SEC head coach is more likely to steal your drink at the coaches' meetings in Sandestin?
Oh, Drinkwitz.
Wow, okay, that's the first for him.
Yeah, no, Drinkwitz. Not because he just would think it's funny.
That's the best. Stoops has been so far the number one so far.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
Which SEC head coach would make the best TV game show host?
Sam Pittman.
Wow, that's the first one for Pitt. I agree with you, man. It's been Beamer and Drink. It's been the two common ones so far. If you could, any coach in football history, if you could have them as a high school teacher, who would you want?
Monty Kiffin.
Oh, that's a good one, man. God rest his soul. Wow.
Yeah. Listen, the times, he was such an incredible teacher. And with enthusiasm and passion all the time. And when I was a first-time assistant coach in college, he took me in and spent time with me, and I learned a ton from him. And then, obviously, I hired Chris, and he came around all the time, and I just thought he was an incredible teacher.
Last one, what are your go-to toppings on a pizza, as many as you want?
Italian sausage, pepperoni, ham, onions, bell peppers.
That man's ordered that a few times. That's good to see you, Bubba.
Yep, thank you.
Wow, Hugh Freeze really just had that one ready to go. It was like he knew Ian's question list, because how was he that prepared for a toppings on pizza discussion when the answer wasn't simply something like pepperoni, Brandon? That was super impressive.
The man is the head coach of the Auburn Tigers. He has to be decisive, Amber. He was ready to rock. He knew where he wanted to go, and he already had three or four toppings right off the rip.
Yeah, I mean, James, that was something.
Well, what's your go-to pizza toppings? You get however many you want, Amber.
My go-to pizza toppings? I don't really have go-to pizza toppings. My two types of pizza, because I don't really, I've never met a pizza I don't like. Okay. But my favorite pizza is the classic cheese pizza with a ton of red pepper flakes on it, is typically how I order my pizza. I also really like veggie pizzas, and I know you're going to scoff at that, but I do. But I've never met a pizza I don't like, Brandon.
If you don't have meat on it, how does that differ from cheese toast? I'm just asking. Because,
you know, I get the protein in the cheese itself. The problem with meat for me on pizza is it gets really greasy. And that's where I typically draw the line. Like sometimes, like I used to love sausage pizza when I was younger, but I feel like it's super heavy and greasy.
A pizza is supposed to be greasy and you must have a meat. I like pepperoni. I like a little bit of sausage. I like a little bit of meat. You don't have to have bacon on it all the time, but you need some pepperoni. You need a little sausage. You need a little hamburger. Then you can throw on some extra cheese, and then you can throw on a pepper or two if you want to. But a pizza is supposed to have a lot of things. There should be a lot of items and a lot of syllables when you order your pizza.
Doesn't need it. Pizza's so good in and of itself. It does not need a whole bunch of toppings on it, frankly. Pizza's such an unbelievable entity with the purity of the pizza, James.
No. I mean, I think you just need
Well, what's your go-to then, James?
No, I'm a pepperoni mushroom guy. I think that's if I'm pressed, I do pepperoni mushroom. I go through these stages where I can't stop thinking about things sometimes. And recently, there's a place in New Haven. It's called Bar Pizza. They have a mashed potato bacon pizza.
Oh, no.
That will, It'll change your life.
No.
It'll change your life.
No.
It is one of the best pizzas I have ever had.
I don't want my life changed.
To James's point, I have had a Thanksgiving Day, like a turkey meal pizza, and it was one of the greatest things I've ever had. And I know it sounds gross. I thought so going in. The mashed potatoes, turkey, there's something there.
Same.
There's nothing there.
I was in college up here at Southern Connecticut, and one of the kids I was in a class with told me about this, and I was like, that sounds disgusting. What are you doing here? And we went, and he made me try a piece, and I think, like, right now, I probably won't stop thinking about it until I go out there and get some. Like, very soon. It's going to consume my thoughts.
I am very pregnant, and that still sounds disgusting. So at this moment,
you said you liked any pizza.
Sounds,
your words.
I apparently draw the line at mashed potatoes on pizza. I just discovered
mashed potato bacon. Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
But mashed potato bacon is still first of all, I don't even like bacon on pizza very much.
Oh,
because
my
I like
goodness.
Really. Because I like really crispy bacon,
yeah,
home team.
Bacon is very crispy on the mashed potato
bacon. On pizza, I feel like it's either always like too small of pieces, or it's going to end up getting soggy in the cheese. Bacon on pizza,
this is not
miss
breakfast,
me with it.
And this is not a salad. You do not have to have crunchy bacon on a pizza.
Yes, you do.
Particularly when there should be other meat toppings on the pizza. So I have to go a complete 180 on that one, Amber. And then as a mom-to-be, a pregnant mom, you wouldn't even try an extra topping like bacon on your pizza that just has cheese on it?
I will try anything once, okay? Right, I will. So I'm one of those people.
All right,
I would take a bite of this horrid and horrific pizza that James is describing with mashed potatoes and bacon on it. I would take a bite, and then I would still confirm that this is disgusting, probably, and I would not move forward. I also don't like mashed potatoes that much. I think mashed potatoes are highly overrated. The baked potato, far superior to the mashed potato.
I'm going to need five, James.
Do you have some injury? Is there a
There's taste nothing better
situation
than mashed potatoes.
That happened? How do you not like mashed potatoes? What's going on, Amber?
It's
one of the most innocuous foods ever.
It goes with everything.
Yeah.
Ugh, they're all right. There's nothing particularly special about mashed potatoes. Like, everyone rants and raves about all these mashed, but they're okay. It's a lot of butter.
It's more like a garlic mash on the pizza, too.
Blue cheese? You can put blue cheese in mashed potatoes?
You can. I'm not really sure why you would, but you can. You could also dress up a baked potato with all sorts of lovely stuff. Talking bacon on a baked potato, now we're talking. Some bacon, some sour cream, some cheddar cheese. A loaded baked potato is where life is at. Not necessarily the mashed potatoes, but mashed potatoes on pizza sound sloppy and disgusting and horrid. Is there also tomato sauce on this pizza, James? Or is the mashed potato the base?
I believe it's like a white sauce. Yeah, so... It's great.
So now you have like Alfredo sauce with cheese and garlic mashed potatoes.
I don't think so. It's not that messy though.
Sounds like a three-course dinner.
It's a really thin crust.
Fill you up.
Sounds like cardiac arrest.
The next time you find your way up here, on campus, I'll make sure that we go and try it because
2025
life changing.
Yeah, that's 2026
or whatever.
Might be a minute. Amber and Ian is presented by Progressive Insurance, making it easy to save money when you bundle your auto policy with home, condo, or renters. You'll earn a multi-policy discount. Easy to bundle, easy to save. Visit progressive.com. Coming up next here on Amber and Ian with Brandon Leak filling in for Ian tonight. I'm pretty upset about the mashed potato pizza, but also even more upset at Chet Holmgren, which is incredibly random. I'll tell you why next, right here on ESPN Radio.
In college football, a solid defensive line protects the end zone. And when it comes to fire safety, quality smoke alarms can help you protect your home. That's where Kidde comes in. Their alarms detect smoke over 25% faster, so you can react when seconds count. Plus, they're quick and easy to install, so you can help protect your home turf and get back to watching your team. Defend your game time with Kidde and the Home Depot. How doers get more done. 29% faster average smoke detection based on internal testing of smoldering wood fires for Kidde 9th edition versus leading competitor 8th edition products.
Want to shop Walmart Black Friday deals first? Walmart Plus members get early access to our hottest deals. Join now and get 50% off a one-year annual membership. Shop Black Friday deals first with Walmart Plus. See terms at walmartplus.com.
Just spent the entire break discussing potatoes, and we decided that potatoes are so versatile. They'd be what, like the Shohei Ohtani of sports? Is that the athlete that connotes the potato?
That's what I said.
Shocked. Yeah. I didn't see that coming from you. The open assault on the mashed potato, Amber. I didn't see it coming.
The mashed potato, I think, is the very bottom of my potato list. Oh. I mean, the potato is an excellent vehicle. You know, there's so many different varieties and the way that it can be served to you. Baked potato would probably be at the top of my list, but there's a whole lot of hash browns and tater tots and scalloped potatoes. There's a whole lot of potatoes before I think we'd get to mashed potatoes.
The mashed potato is just a baked potato with a little bit more love on it. That's it.
It's mushy. It's a mushy baked potato.
Same thing you can put on a baked potato. Cheese, chives, bacon bits, butter. Mm. You can put on the mashed potato.
It's unnecessary. It's goopy.
Oh, man. All right.
It's just okay.
All right.
So on Amber Wilson's potato big board, that's why the mashed is like a fifth or sixth round pick? Is that what we're
right.
saying?
Yeah, gotcha. No, that feels about right, actually.
Oh, it should be a two-seat.
Come to think of it, like I never really eat mashed, but I very rarely eat mashed potatoes. And my mom, when I was growing up, she would always make them. She would only eat mashed potatoes if they were made from scratch. Okay. So, you know, they were good when I'd have them, but like, they're just not, you know, like I said, there's a lot of other ways I'd prefer potatoes before I got to mashing them up. So to each their own as well, when it comes to Chet Holmgren, except for when he decides to take shots at my Miami Heat, which is exactly what happened, completely unnecessarily, but from the OKC center. I was just minding my business today, okay? Just going about living my life. And all of a sudden, this quote from Chet Holmgren, taking a flamethrower to Miami Heat fans, had to enter my life, Brandon. And I did not wake up this morning and think, I would like to dislike Chet Holmgren today. That wasn't on my radar. But Chet Holmgren decided to make an appearance in my life in that manner. He went on the Road Trippin' podcast, and he was asked where he likes to play and took a flamethrower to Miami. Take a listen.
I like Miami because it's just like empty. It's like... No. Let me get to it.
No, we know what you mean. They come in late.
It is real.
And it's like,
oh, yeah.
It was crazy.
It's like a drunk, like,
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah.
They're like, real. First quarter? Don't worry about that first quarter.
As the away team, you just got to build that lead in the first three quarters. Yeah. And then it just stays quiet for the fourth.
Brandon. I mean, I am incensed. First of all, this is tired because I can't tell you how many years I've been hearing this nonsense for. But also, what cracks me up about this is Chet Holmgren has played in front of the Miami crowd one time in his entire very young NBA career. And when he did, it was 400 people below capacity. There was well over 19,000 people in Kaseya Center when he played there. Capacity is 20,000 people. So he played in front of an arena that was at capacity, essentially, which, by the way, is larger than his own arena and larger than any home crowd the Thunder had all of last season. So from that perspective, I thought, what the hell is he talking about? Now, I do feel like you heard the other voices jump in there and they're like, it's true, they're always late. And they tried to make it about like the late thing and whatever. But Chet started with it was empty.
It's an attack. It's an attack. It's an attack on the fans, on the culture, on the season ticket holders, on Bernie the mascot. It's an attack. Now, obviously, when people leave early repeatedly, because the Dodgers have been known and criticized for that. Dodger fans have been known for showing up late and leaving early. Well, years, you know, fans see it and so do players. But, yeah, when you're talking about a team like that, you know, I could stand with you. You know, if I were a Heat fan, I certainly, you know, can respect that. As a well-raised Falcon fan, the only fan base I wouldn't defend are the New Orleans Saints. But outside of that, when you attack, when you go on an attack of a fan base, and to your point, after playing just one time, when there's so many different factors that can go into it, regular season game, injuries, what's the score? Is it a blowout? You know, is it a Tuesday night? Is it a, you know, Thursday night?
It was a Wednesday night, by the way, I think, when Chet played.
Yeah, so there are a lot of factors that go into that. Look, he's young, and it makes for a good conversation, but yeah, now, when he shows up for a Miami Heat game, guess what? The fans, the season ticket holders, and Bernie will be lying in wait, waiting to see what kind of game and what kind of impact they could have on his game, as he certainly now will be booed.
Yes. I don't know why you're making an enemy out of that environment in Miami, but that's what you're trying to do. It's a low-hanging fruit. People do it all over our network. It drives me insane. I've had a million arguments with Carlin and Joe over the years as well. They're always trying to go after the home crowd there in Miami. Canty goes after Miami. A lot of our talent even tries to go after Miami, and it's just something that we got tired of in Miami for so many years, because the reality is there was a long time where the Heat owned the longest home sellout winning streak or home sellout streak in the NBA. That was the owned by the Miami Heat for a very long time. In terms of attendances last season, in 2023, the Heat had the fourth best attendance in the NBA. The Thunder, the 23rd best attendance in the NBA. It's not comparable when you talk about how many tickets they sell and how many fans are in the stadium. Now, is there an argument to be made that Miami fans show up late? Fine. Yes, that's a reality. Miami fans do show up late. There's a variety of factors. It's the only arena that's surrounded on three sides by an ocean. There is one way to get into that arena. There is one side to get into that arena on, essentially. And it is not easy because it's right downtown Miami. And from a traffic perspective, it is truly an absolute nightmare. I understand that that sounds like a lot of excuses and people will be like, no, every arena has traffic around it. No, you do not understand. I assure you, you do not understand. Nevertheless, I've been hearing it for a very long time. And there's a culture thing in Miami. Everybody's late in Miami. That's also a cultural thing. Fine. But the reality is the attendance in Miami is no problem. Like, people are there. They might show up a little late. They're there. This idea that Miami fans leave early as well, and I mean, that's coming from a singular playoff game during the LeBron era. Let's be real. Everybody leaves early when you're getting whooped, especially on a Wednesday night, Brandon. Like, the fan base that doesn't leave.
You just stole my thunder. I need the documentation of the greatest fan base while they are being whipped that stick around until the game is just about over with 42 clicks left on the clock. It makes no sense. People get out of there early. You know, there are a lot of factors. Did Jimmy play that game? No. So, you know, what are we talking about? There are so many factors when you're talking about going after, you know, an organization like that. And a championship organization to boot.
You're right. Exactly. I mean, slow your roll, Chet. Okay, we'll talk Chet when you win some championships, buddy. Chet. Okay? I don't know about Chet. I haven't known many Chets in my life. All right, the jury's still out on you. You're the only one I know. And you're not ingratiating yourself to that Miami fan base by any means. So now he's a marked man down in Miami. Coming up next here on Amber and Ian, we take one last trip to SEC Media Days. You won't want to miss it. That's all next on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app.